We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Sam, listeners, Light Years Podcast, do you ever feel like you're always on? What do you do when you need a moment to chill? How do you like to hit the reset button to get ready for what's next? There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. The mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Wow, that's amazing. That way you always know when it's time to chill. When you need to hit reset, just open up a Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment and made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
Light Years Podcast, we are back. Andy Liu, Sam Esfandiari. Sam, this week we've got special guest Dave McMenamin from Clutch Sports. From ESP.
I'm just very excited to collaborate with Dave this week.
Anymore? Keep that being the can.
That's just the start. We're gonna keep going down the line here. No, but we appreciate having you on, man. I didn't actually think you would, but it's good. This is fun already.
I still haven't met you guys in person, but the magic of the internet, I feel like I've gotten to know you guys a little bit, your personalities and your work and all that stuff. So yeah, why not? Let's do it. It's the holidays. We were supposed to do it in person in Oakland, but we'll have to do with the Skype podcast.
Yeah, Andy and I started our gentrification process by not going over to Oakland a year before the Warriors. So
oh man, that's so how did you, Dave, how did you kind of, because I remember when your tweet first came out, this is what everyone's gonna listen to the podcast for.
Sure.
And me and Sam before the pod, we're like, all right, we gotta dig up some tweets, we gotta talk some shit. We can't find the tweet.
Yeah, the tweets are gone. I made that decision last summer. Because I just got tired of, whatever. If Stephen Curry, it's not even like Steph scores 40 in a game. It'd be like he would hit two threes in a row in a quarter, and I'd get 12 retweets and people call me trash and any other word in the book. I mean, listen, I didn't want that to define my NBA coverage that I've been covering the league for 13 years. And, is it – I think it's kind of like a study in what draws attention. I'm not a negative person by nature. I love the game of basketball. I've really dedicated my life to the game of basketball. And so, if anything, I usually get accused of being too soft on players by the Twitterati out there. And so, like, one of the few times I just go straight up trashing someone. It wasn't even, honestly, it was not meant to be a severe slight to him. But obviously that's why it was taken. And then obviously I ran with it a little bit, in that night, but the way people responded to it, it was, the most engagement perhaps I've ever had on any story or tweet or radio or TV or podcast appearance. And you know, I just wanted to not have that be a thing that
you don't want to be.
It's a continued conversation. Well, I mean, listen, had I written like a treatise on it, had I done like a Jerry Maguire type, stayed up in the middle of the night and handed out blue pamphlets to everyone that got into work the next day about how Steph Curry is not a franchise player, then yeah, sure. This was a quickly thought out list of players that regretfully included Karl Anthony Towns way prematurely, and maybe someday he would be deserved to be included in that list. But you know, it was an exercise, quite frankly, in the power in omission, when obviously, because I was covering the Cleveland Cavaliers, I guess for 3 years at that point.
You're going to get no love from Barry.
Yeah, I mean, the Warriors and Cavs are one of the, you know, that will go down as one of the great rivalries in NBA history. Perhaps a one-sided rivalry, most of your listeners would say, but certainly we got some great finals matchups out of it. And, you know, my opinion, whether it was influenced by others or not, people would say that it was, you know, like me carrying the water for the Cavs.
So Rich Paul influence tweet right there.
No, so I have a couple things on it, because I think I understood what you meant by it, which was essentially a lot of Steph's influence is based kind of on context. Like, he draws doubles probably more than anyone, but you have to have someone to take advantage of those double teams he draws. And that kind of how he has kind of an indirect impact on the game, that's as opposed to, like, I mean, LeBron's, it's pretty straightforward if you watch LeBron, like, his impact. Would that be like a fair way of describing what you're trying to drive?
Yeah, I think so. So, like, I think the terminology of franchise changing, it was looking towards the future. So it was hypothetical, which I did not explain in the tweet, but my thought process was, if you were to start with an expansion team number 31 in the NBA in Seattle, which handful of players in the league would you immediately, if you got that player to your team with the other 14 roster spots unfilled, no coach, no GM, no nothing, you feel like that player could lift you almost immediately to where you want to be? And obviously Steph Curry deserves all the credit for the way the Golden State Warriors have changed as a franchise. So it wasn't trying to throw dirt on what he had already accomplished. It was more looking forward. And go ahead.
No, I'm going to take a hard left turn, 'cause I'm curious about something. You cover Kobe, right?
Correct.
What does Steph fans have to do to get there?
Before they are, what was the terminology the Game of Zones did on Christmas Day or whatever? Kobe Stannies or something? I don't know what the word they use for
Amin,
it. But,
Amin El-Hassan definitely uses that one.
Yeah, Amin uses that. I think it's a different.
Yeah, because you know all of this well, I'm sure. You know the fan reactions and all that there. I mean, Laker fans are insane, as I'm sure you know now, again, that you're covering them again. So I'm kind of curious, that kind of that reaction that you got there about Steph. Like, what is it on the realm of, like, what Kobe fans would actually, like, how would they react if something like that happened?
I mean, and that's actually an interesting way to put it. And I guess that also allows me to, I guess, believe that you are putting Steph Curry in the same conversation as Kobe, which, like, I don't do, but I guess it's not like a crazy premise. I mean, the guy has two MVPs. The guy has three rings. I don't think he's going to stop at three rings. There'll be more that he adds, and he could match Kobe with five, and then he'd have five rings and more MVPs than him. And the, you know, what's that conversation about? But I guess whether it was sleeping too much on those accomplishments that he's had, or just quite frankly viewing him as a wonderful player, incredible talent that never gets mentioned. Incredible talent, just the collaborative talent part gets mentioned. Incredible talent. But an incredible talent that thrives in a cater-made system with also wonderful pieces around him. And that's a sign of a great player. I was never trying to suggest that he wasn't a great player. It was just more like, could this player with you know, four mediocre players on the court. Could he do the stuff that he's doing?
Yeah, and then that's kind of like the main argument, I think, too, of the finals MVPs and why that's always why Warriors fans, I think me more so than Sam, are always when, okay, KD sits out a game, Steph jacks up, you know, 25 shots, and it's like, all right, we're back. This is what we wanted. This is all we've ever needed. We don't care if the Warriors win 52. Actually, they might win 52 this year, but we don't care if they win 52 games. At least Steph is gonna, you know, average 30 points again. Blah blah blah. But
and that's the wild thing to me though is like our Warriors fans contributing to the demise or potential demise of this team. We're not demise. I think they'll still.
No, be that's an fascinating awesome question.
Yeah, you know, like just we know that Kevin Durant. And this yep. is why I like Kevin Durant. He experiences the burns on Twitter and feels it the same way I do. And so, like, you know, even though he has, you know, a stature in the craft that he's been trying to master for years, anonymous people on Twitter still get under his skin. And there's a lot of them who are Warriors fans who, you know, worship at the altar of Steph and almost, like, enjoy when KD struggles because it only goes to serve to the greatness of Steph Curry.
So I think it's this. Sam agrees with this. He came up with this one. It's so on Twitter, there's you get a large majority of people, but it doesn't represent most people. So most people are
try telling your family member who doesn't use Twitter about like some sort of argument there. They look at you like you have some major problems.
The problem with KD though is he sees like what Sam or what I'm tweeting, like, hey, or whatever it is, or whoever's tweeting, right? Like some dude with 10 followers, like he sees that. And then, but he cares about it. And then he acts like this is how, what a lot of people feel. And I think
it's putting yourself in a bubble and thinking this bubble is representative of the larger view.
Well, do you guys have iPhones?
Yeah.
By any chance? So, like, in the last, 6 months or something like that, there's been an update where you get a weekly notification of how much screen time you've spent on average per day, which is super depressing for me. Sometimes it's been, like, over 10 hours. I'm like, what am I doing with my life? But, you know, that is the portal that many people exist in, right? And so, like, the vast majority of people don't have access to Kevin Durant, you know, like, because he's out of practice or he's spending time with his loved ones, or he's playing in a game, you know, or he's on an airplane flying to a game. But when he's on his phone, all that negativity literally has access right into his thought process, into his mental well-being, et cetera. And so while it might represent a minority in terms of the total fan base of the Warriors, it represents a majority of the interaction perhaps that he has with the fan base.
And bringing it back to the original thing, there's definitely like he's not as loved as Steph Curry. No one will ever be as loved as Steph with this fan base. LeBron could come to the Warriors and, you know, Warrior fans would still kind of, you know, get more excited about anything Steph does. That's just a thing, but I actually think the negativity he receives from the broader NBA fan base, who constantly tells him none of his achievements with the Warriors mean anything,
right,
is probably going to be the bigger driver if he does leave.
Yeah, that's a fair point to make. I mean, on some level, when he's able to step away from the situation, whether he stays with the Warriors or not, but when he's just removed from this incredible run that they've been on, he'll feel so grateful for his time with the Warriors. Like I'm sure of that. I mean, the two finals MVPs speak to that. Him hitting like that shot from the left wing in back-to-back finals. Like, I mean, that will be the reel that they show when he makes into the Hall of Fame.
What do you
go for it?
So let's talk about KD. We still have to talk about LeBron, but let's talk about KD since we're on here. What are your thoughts here of the kind of this whole season? I'm sure you've been tracking it because he's been the Warriors' best player. Steph has missed like 13 games, and he's just been even like the times where he's moody after what Draymond did. He's been so great, but
In all facets, team, by the way. He's like
everything.
Yeah, he's I mean, he's averaging a career high in assists, but they're basically using him in kind of the de facto way that LeBron's used in every team he plays on.
Yeah, and he's a better defender than LeBron is by a large degree at this point. The thing I just am curious about, the on-court product, for the most part, on KD's, you know, his contribution is unassailable, especially this season when you see guys like Klay Thompson and Draymond Green struggle with regularity. Now, I thought Steph was playing like phenomenal basketball when I was tuning in. You know, I watched the Warriors, I don't know, probably five of their first 10 games or whatever, when Steph was just wonderful. And then obviously the groin injury has caused him to play some catch up. But all the other stuff is like, you know, whether he's talking about LeBron or talking about any other player, why do the interview with Rick Bucher and make those type of comments?
Right.
Because, listen, whether, you know, LeBron told Rachel Nichols that Kevin told him that they were somehow, whatever the conversation was skewed in some way that wasn't totally representative of it. But even still, if you're going to go on a podcast with Chris Haynes and tell Chris that after the Draymond incident, you don't appreciate people going on TV and talking about what was going through your head, then why are you talking about what's going through other players' heads in terms of wanting to play with LeBron?
He needs PR help. He needs what LeBron does so well. Like, LeBron's great at just knowing what to say, knowing when to say it, knowing who to say it to, right? And just being fake if necessary, and just being fake honest if necessary.
Or just not saying anything. A lot of, like, learning how to answer a question without giving anything away. Steph does that too, where he was just kind of like the most generic, like, non-answer to anything. Like, KD will tell you what he's thinking in that moment.
What he's actually thinking, yeah.
And, I mean, in 2018, with the way social media and the internet works, like, I just don't see it as, like, a positive return on investment statement.
Yeah, and of course, as someone who, like, covers the NBA for a living, I appreciate the honesty of it. Like, I would never say that, but, like, he can also realize the impact it can have on how he's perceived, or, you know, and again, controlling the narrative is like a term that I shouldn't promote for an athlete to do, but, you know, it can make their life easier. And it can also, like, you know, like, it can also just kind of help them out in terms of where you want to go. Like, it, you know, obviously someone like LeBron, you know, Dwayne Wade just said to Joe Varden of The Athletic, where he knew last year when he came to the Cavs that LeBron's ultimate goal was to play for the Lakers. Now, he didn't say when that was going to happen, but he said that was his ultimate goal.
Yep.
But LeBron, with all the media interactions that he had last year, knowing that it was, you know, potentially his last year there, made it all about putting that story as far away as possible and making it about, I'm playing all 82 games. I'm playing all 48 minutes of a game 7 of a Eastern Conference Finals. I'm hitting game winning shots and going a victory wrap around the arena, in Cleveland. And so he gave us stuff to cover that was very, you know, pro.
Right. You could have
about his time in Cleveland, because that was literally the story. I mean, that was, we weren't like making that up. Like, it was tangible things that were happening.
Right. You could have written a LeBron free agency story every day if you wanted to, but he gave you other stuff to cover.
Sure.
Yeah, Dave, we call that LeBronaganda. That's how it works over here. We're curious about the vibe between the two, because last year there were pieces. I think, was it Winhurst that had written one that about LeBron taking a rest during games, and how that's like helping him play all 48 minutes. And we're just sitting here like, really? Like, come on.
Yeah, come on. I mean, yeah. LeBron said something along the lines of he saves pockets of energy, which is another way of saying loafing on defense. But, you know, if you say it one way, it can get described one way, you know. I do think he's a smart man. I also think he's been in the national spotlight. Like, he's about to turn 34. It's been almost two decades. And so he's picked up on a lot. And it's not necessarily playing the media, but it's working with the media, or it's knowing that they're going to write something. I mean, that's what we're employed to do. We're going to cover the NBA on a daily basis for about 10 and a half months a year. And so if you give them something, that will get covered. Like, and it's not like, of course, everything he says, like, I'm just like, okay, I'll go write that. No, but, you know, if there is, you know, obviously a thought on his end, and he's, you know, having a conversation with you that he's not having with someone else, well, you know, there's a lot of people out there that creates an audience that like to read or hear exclusive information from LeBron James. And guess what? They feel the same way about Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant could follow that playbook. And
he's trying to in his own way.
He's got the Chris Haynes podcast and all that.
Yeah,
right? Yeah, very odd. He's got the Bill Simmons where he just kind of sits around and bullshits for like 2 hours and we're just
eats pretzels on the podcast.
Then he has Rich. See, the difference, the other thing is, like, I mean, KD, why don't you get yourself a Rich Paul? Why is Rich climbing on these things? What does he do? I don't even know, Dave, if you can speak to this kind of stuff, but like, come on. Can he hire a guy that knows, like, how to talk to people?
I don't know Rich too well at all personally. I mean, I know a little bit about his story. I do think that he's someone that you can just tell from the relationship that Kevin Durant trusts so much. Uh-huh. And obviously, for the most part, like, I would have to say, if he's an advisor of Kevin Durant's career, it's worked out because Kevin Durant is in such a great space in terms of, you know, what he's accomplished on the court, and you know, it seems like he's stacking money off the court by being in Silicon Valley. But yeah, I think there's just like tact, and LeBron didn't have tact for a while. Like, I think, you know, in Miami he had tons of missteps. You know, he had the press conference where he said, like, I'm reading all the things that people are saying out about me out there, and I'm taking notes, you know, like, super petty. And, you know, petty doesn't come off well when you're a certain level.
I also wonder if LeBron went through that first year of the Miami Heat, you know, and just kind of, like, all the missteps and just, I mean, it was pretty mean. The whole thing, like, on both sides, like, everyone hated them. If that happened in 2018, if it wouldn't, like, change the entire perception of his trajectory the whole way forward, because it feels like media has adapted, even in just like 8 years, taken just a completely different term in terms of the way things stick.
Oh yeah, I mean, he could have gone by way of, obviously, again, injuries and all that stuff, staying on the court and doing things is going to ultimately tell your tale, but he could have been like a golden boy on the level of a Dwight Howard. And, you know, where Dwight Howard 8 years ago versus Dwight Howard today is the perception totally different. Now, Andy, my question to you, though, is like, were you inspired by Stephen Colbert? Like, how did you come to have this persona, which is, I don't believe is an actual persona. I think it's kind of, you know, a mask you wear. You wear it well. But when did you kind of come to that decision? Like, this is going to be my best path to have an impact on the crazy world of NBA Twitter.
It's funny because Sam has known me since the beginning, and he always calls me, because he knows, like, the games I watch. He knows, like, I like, you know, for example, white centers that set good screens and pass, you know, rebound. Like, those are like some of my favorite players. Right. So. He knows that that's how I got started. At a certain point where I started to realize that, you know, I'm not going to be a reporter. I don't want to be a beat reporter. I don't want to do all these things that I kind of set out that I thought I was going to do when I first started in the industry. Well, I was like, all right, I'm going to get a credential. I'm going to ask a lot of questions. I'm going to do all this stuff, right? Then I realized, okay, that's not as fun. I'm going and then, you know, and I was working another job, a full-time job. So I was like, you know what? Like, let's kind of make this more fun, more entertaining. especially for the people that follow me. And of course, if you're going to do the type of trolling that I do, you also get more recognition, right? And everybody always wants, you know, more attention. And so that's kind of where it is, in terms of kind of where it like blew up. It was just the Warriors became good, because I started in Mark when Mark Jackson was last year of coach of his coaching thing. And then the Warriors became great. And 2015-16, it was still like, all right, I kept it pretty chill. But then in 16-17, when the 73 win season, when people were like, all right, well, they had a lucky championship, you know, blah, blah, this and that, Steph, all this stuff, right? That's when I was like, okay, you know what? I can kind of make all of this jokes. And it's not ever worth, you can speak to this, it's not ever worth actually arguing with people in the mentions and actually having a conversation. That's never worth it now. So you just make a joke, say something funny, say it's a troll, and then just leave it, right? That's it. Because the moment you start engaging is when you fuck up.
Honestly.
Do you even read the mentions though? Or you just put it out there? Okay.
Oh, I love, yeah.
they come to the group chat, and you'll send me the most racist ones he gets and just laugh about it. But
that's life.
Yeah,
so no blocking or muting or anything reporting.
I only block when somebody threatens like violence. But like I don't, you know, you have like what 180,000. I have like a percent of that, right? And so I don't get like, if I threw out like a Steph is collaborative talent tweet, I wouldn't get nearly the same attention, you know, like in terms of that. So like I think people think I get a lot more hate than I do, which is funny because Sam was actually crazier than me in 2016 with the slander that he was doing, but he's calmed down a lot, you know, old age and all of that. So
Sam, what's an example of that though?
Yeah,
I was aware. Okay, all right.
Oh boy.
have you scrubbed some tweets from your timeline just like I did?
Yeah, and I just deleted everything before 16 because it was just getting too much. It was easier than scrubbing through stuff. I was like, oh, I kind of want to take that one off. I think it was where someone, like obviously a lot of them were mostly meant in jest, and someone sent something to like my employer, and I'm like, all right, this is not fun anymore. And the employer didn't care. They just, the only thing they cared about was it was sent during hours I was at the office. So, I decided, I guess it was that moment it hit me. It's like, you know, this links to like my name in like a real life way. It's not just kind of fun. So at that point, it's like, all right, I'm just going to curate this in a way that, you know, hey, if my grandma sees something here, it's, you know, whatever. Right.
So are you guys like happy to have that there's guys kind of like Justin Rowan out there who kind of took up the mantle during the Cavs Warriors years where he was stirring the pot too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
we love that because it's because we try not to take offense to any jokes, right? Like if people want to make fun of Warriors fans being bandwagoners or want to make fun of like all this stuff, it's fine. Like it's all, I think you said it once too, Dave, like it's part of how social media is. Like if you take it personally, you've already lost. Like that's it for you. I think what me and Sam, at least for me, I think what we may regret a little bit in 2016 is probably just, is the because that was when Donald Trump was elected. We were pretty hard on that line with Oklahoma and Cleveland and Ohio, and maybe should have toned that a little bit.
It was funny for us, but then you know when things happen, you look at it, you're like, all right, that was probably, you know, it didn't need to take it that far anyway.
Yeah. Especially, right. Sam's like, all right, let's move on.
No, which is fine by me too. But like, so, I mean, the really fun part about having Twitter and having social media be a part of the job is like, there's so many waste of time parts of this job where it's like, I'm at a rental car center waiting for the shuttle to come, or I am in line at TSA pre-check, you know, like, and it's like, okay, I'm just going to scroll Twitter and interact with a fan or see mentions, and like all those things are fun. And sometimes people point out stuff to me or like they take a screen grab during the game of some play that I hadn't seen. And it's like, okay, I'm gaining value from this, right? It's just all the other things where it's like, I can relate to a player on a much smaller scale. Like you said, if your Twitter following, Andy, is a percentage of mine, my Twitter following is an even smaller percentage of someone like LeBron or KD or any of these guys, you know? And just to feel that inundation where you literally can open your phone and you can be scrolling through dozens and dozens of negative tweets in a row, not necessarily even always directly towards me, but just towards the team, you know, after the team I cover, if they lay an egg or something like that, it's something where, yeah, it is. And it's like, I guess it shouldn't matter and you should try to remove yourself from it to some degree. Like, cause you know, you still have your real world and you have your friends and you're getting paid by your employer and all this stuff. And Twitter doesn't pay the bills, but I don't know that it, for some reason, it has a hold on me to some extent. I think like most people who have been on Twitter for a while would probably agree with that.
You just explained why KD is going to be in New York next year.
Well, yeah, Nick's Twitter will love him for a certain amount of time. But then he'll get Kristaps better tweets, and you know, then he'll be going to the next team.
you thought that the Warriors media was, you know, like maybe asking too many questions about, you know, what's going on between you and Draymond. I mean, wait till New York media comes around and starts and you go maybe, you know, 10 for 29 in a game and make a couple moody grin, you know, expressions. That's going to be fun. But we want to talk about the Cleveland LeBron. Mm-hmm. We want to talk about the Laker LeBron. And we want to talk about like the differences in terms of just like the vibe, I guess, of the team itself. Just kind of last year, this year, maybe even before that, because it does feel like LeBron, it feels like he's lived in LA his whole life at this point. And it feels like this is it for him. And it feels like he's happy. I don't know, but he's definitely making it out to be like, hey, like this is me now. This is kind of who I always am. And I mean, it's working. I'm sure you have more to say about this. Than
sure. That. Well, I mean, like, you know, from the time that you guys have been like around the Warriors, like, you know, that even if you have the most access as a reporter, there's not that much. I mean, you're not getting a ton of time. And so, like, we can't really know these guys. I'm never going to be that person who wants to say, like, oh, I know he's happy because he was cracking jokes at practice. I don't know what he was doing the other 23 hours of the day. But, you know, when I talk to people who are around him, talk to people he works with, talk to people who have, you know, been around him for you know, the entire run, you know, we're talking a decade and a half, they are telling me that he's happy. And he's telling Rachel Nichols on Christmas Day that he's happy. So, like, I'll buy that. I'm not going to second guess that. So I think there's a level of comfort that a lot of people experience in terms of knowing who they are and being okay with it. I thought, you know, Draymond Green was really interesting. I thought it was actually one of the most interesting things I've heard anyone say about LeBron James in the time I've covered him. I think he was on the shop and he said, like, when you started like embracing, like calling yourself king and like, you know, this is the way I do it. And like, rub some people the wrong way, but it was kind of like, you seem to feel more comfortable with stuff. Like, rather, you know, and so once he kind of got to this level in his life, it's like, is he really going to get mad about, you know, some analyst out there who, you know, doesn't think he's as good as Michael Jordan when he has made $765 million in his career and, you know, is taking his family out of a tough city like Akron and, you know, setting himself up for his kids and his kids' kids and his kids' kids' kids to have great lives in the future? Like, no. So, yeah, I think there's a happiness there. The Cleveland LeBron, the first couple of years before they won the championship, one, I didn't know him as well, and so there's a push and pull to that, and you're always on edge covering someone you don't necessarily know. It's like encountering like an animal in the woods. It's like, is this going to be an animal that likes me? Is it going to be an animal that tries to charge at me? There was also just that insane pressure of needing to win because Cleveland hadn't won a championship for 50-plus years. LeBron came back explicitly to do it. And there was just drama every day. And So that was, you know, I got to look at the 4 years in Cleveland. The first 2 years were very much different than the second 2 years. You know, once they won the championship, and LeBron tells Joe Varden the following spring that he has nothing left to prove in his career, when they were playing Toronto in the playoffs, it's kind of like, you know, like the guys on that team, they want to win. Kyle Korver never won a championship. You know, he's putting everything he can into it to try to win. And, you know, there's still a competitive spirit with that group. But the stakes just didn't feel as high. I mean, a couple months after the Cavs won the championship, the Indians blow a 3-1 lead in the World Series. You know, and Cleveland, like, they woke up the next day and we're okay, you know. That wouldn't have happened. And so I think the team changed, the city changed, LeBron changed. And now you see a guy who I think he would certainly love to have a championship in Los Angeles to kind of put a bow on things. But if he doesn't get it, it's not really going to change how he views himself or views his time in the NBA.
Well, yeah.
Go ahead, Sam. I was going to say, no, that's interesting, that last part right there, because will it not change how he feels himself in the NBA? Because that would be three titles, right? That's one in Cleveland, you know, two in Miami, and kind of nothing since then. It'd be kind of tough, wouldn't it, though? Like, I'm sure if...
Oh, see, I disagree here. I don't think anything's going to change how he's viewed historically, like LeBron the player. I don't think anything that goes on from here can only grow the legend. It's not gonna like dim the legend if he never wins in LA. But I do think if the Lakers never get better than what they're trending for this year, which is, you know, 50-ish win, solid playoff team, and that's just what LeBron's time is there, I wonder if Laker fans view him a certain way. Cause like right now, you know, the Lakers have been terrible for 5 years and they're relevant, and it's kind of the vibe around the team. I mean, Dave, let me know if I'm wrong on this. It seems like they have one of the better vibes around their team than most of the league, just because it's kind of like first year being back relevant. If that doesn't kind of progress, I think it's going to turn into a weird situation there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't disagree with you that it could make things uncomfortable in the moment, for sure. Right. And like, I wasn't trying to suggest that like he came to there, because there are people out there, oh, he only came here to retirement make movies tour. Like that. Like, no, like it's not that. He's 34 years old. I mean, he still has a lot of basketball left to play. I guess it's just more of like, in the overall scheme of things, you know, Pat Riley said that he texted this to LeBron after game 7, like, you're free. Like, when he, you know, in game 7 2016, like, that was such a burden on him, that he's operating without it now, and he's a competitive guy and he's a calculating guy, and that he came to LA not only with the thought that, you know, he likes these young pieces, but quite frankly, I think he came to LA with the thought that, you know, this Warriors dynasty is
can't
close
go on forever.
Whether it's this year or not, it can't go on forever. And so he wanted to be in the best possible spot to kind of be able to quickly turn another super team together in the wake that's created whenever Golden State takes that step backwards.
So let's
talk about recruiting.
I wanted to start with the Laker young players. There was a prevalent thought that, you know, LeBron would have no patience with them because, in general, veteran players, particularly ones who are, you know, as talented and smart as LeBron, don't have patience with young players. And it's kind of been the opposite, in the sense of maybe it's because they haven't had as rocky a start as he did when he went to Cleveland or anything. But is there a perception that does it seem he likes some of these young players more so than he's liked ones in the past, or are they all just kind of placeholders?
Wow.
Sorry.
Yeah, I was like, oh, we could have this conversation, then the placeholder is live. listen, I mean, again, this is just getting back to, it's not a cop-out line, but I only see so much between the interactions he has with these guys. But what I see is a locker room that gets along with one another and, you know, see guys comment on what guys are wearing. And I see LeBron doing things like when he leaves the locker room at the end of the night and they're home in L.A., like, you know, saying goodbye, like, you know, checking out with these guys and, you know, dapping them up or saying, oh, we getting dinner already and stuff like that. Like, I think that's a sign of a healthy team. But they are coworkers, like, you know, like,
right.
And I'm not going to dinner every night with coworkers either. You know, you got to do stuff outside of work. So in terms of fit on the floor, I think a lot of the guys have shown a lot of promise there playing alongside LeBron. I think the one guy that remains a bigger question mark, and some of that's just because he's missed so much time this year because of the suspension and a bad ankle sprain, is Ingram. Like, LeBron has repeatedly publicly said things to build that guy up. Like, you know, he told me on media day in our sit down, like, I think he's next. Like, you know, he's the next thing in this league. He also said earlier in training camp that he thought he could be like one of the best defensive players in the league, like things like that. He's building up his confidence. I haven't seen a great fit with them yet, but I've also seen like some sequences where, you know, LeBron is activated on one wing defensively, Ingram's activated on the other, and then they get one of them gets ends up getting a deflection or gets the ball, and then those two on a 2-on-1 or 3-on-2 fast break, that's pretty devastating. And so I think there is a potential role there.
Well, I mean, I guess he did trade Wiggins before Kevin Love, so he has Wiggins again. He has him again.
Someone tweeted me that yesterday or today, actually. They're like, I wrote this thing like nine things you might not know about LeBron on his 34th birthday, you know, whatever. Like, trying to figure out some stuff that has not been widely covered. And someone's like, well, why don't you write about how he traded Andrew Wiggins? Because he tried to get Andrew Wiggins to sign with Nike, and then he wouldn't do it. Like, okay, guess what? He traded for a guy The Cavs traded for a guy that he had pre-existing relationship with, and they won a gold medal together, and then they won a championship together. So, and now, you know, anyway, I digress. But no, listen, all the guys in that locker room, they know what's at stake. They knew what was at stake last year because they saw what happened with Julius Randle. You know, it's the business of the NBA where if you play for a team, especially a team like the Lakers, who their owner, you know, was so cutthroat that she ousted her brother from the organization to wrestle control. Because they needed to win championships because they weren't serving their father's legacy without doing that. That's the only thing that matters. And so if these players don't make a leap of enough forward as a group showing that they can win with LeBron, there will be changes that are made, and they all know that.
How come – tell us why players don't like playing with LeBron.
Sam, what do you got? What's your question?
Because we got, I mean, he obviously wants Dame and Kawhi, and apparently Kawhi doesn't want to play there, right? I'm literally just going off of what people write. And then, you know, KD doesn't seem like he's going to be there. You know, so it seems like
the KD one because he talks out of both sides on it that. No matter what he does with regards to that, he's going to upset someone.
Yeah, I mean, the KD one's interesting to me. Like, I don't know too many players that take an off day during the regular season to spend a full day shooting commercial like they,
right.
Like Kevin and LeBron did last year on a snowy day in Cleveland with Uber and Carrie Champion. Like, that's not like a normal occurrence. I mean, I'm not saying that means anything that's right. Definitely going to happen, but, you know, I also am not going to say it's definitely not going to happen. And then beyond that, like, you look at all the other players are out there. Like, you know, the Lakers will have a slot for one max player, and all they need is one. And I'm sure the Lakers as an organization have a preference, like, without directly quoting Magic or Rob Pelinka, like, I'm pretty sure the preference would look something along the lines of KD 1, Kawhi 2, Jimmy Butler 3, or maybe even Klay Thompson 3, you know, Jimmy Butler 4. Like, you know, that's kind
of
like
the order of the best players available.
Right, the best players that are available are free agents who would play with LeBron. Like, you know, Kyrie Irving's a great player, but he's not going to play with LeBron again. So, you know, you got that list, and then if they can't sign that guy, then they go to trade their pieces to try to get their marquee number two next to him. And, you know, that's why Dame Lillard's in the conversation, because he's under contract. That's why Anthony Davis is in the conversation, because he's under contract. But, you know, this is just what, like, this is not unique to, I think, teams that actually win, they just make sure they do whatever they can to surround their best talent with more talent. And so whether that be lucking into a salary cap spike that
I knew you were gonna say
caused by a new TV contract that perpetuated the Golden State Warriors being one of the greatest teams of all time, or whether that being a team that drafts really well. I mean, that's, you know, obviously that always gets more credit, what San Antonio did. You know, they tanked to get Tim Duncan, and then they drafted really well, and they didn't need to, you know, trade for or sign their other stars. They got Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker to do it. But, like, other teams draft really well, and, you know, guess what? They don't win a championship like the Thunder. Or other teams draft kind of well, and, you know, they put together some of the pieces, like Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, and then the other guys, you know, they kind of really hurt their careers, like Jahlil Okafor. You know, and that's shrapnel at the side that you don't talk about. Because they're still pursuing that championship. I mean, it's quite literally the business of the NBA. I mean, like, you know, the Cavs, when they won in 2016, they had guys like Joe Harris that were there for half the season, Jared Cunningham half the season. Like, guess what? They were still trying to make tweaks, and, you know, they brought in Channing Frye, and, you know, they said goodbye to Anderson Barajal.
Yeah,
you know, who was like a long time.
Oh God, don't speak about Andy.
he was still key in the parts. Title run.
Yeah, believe us, he was important. You know, I'm curious, because the jokes are always like, well, you know, it's hard to play with LeBron, blah, blah, but like, who, like, it's just tough to kind of see someone go in there unless you're a known, you know, second rate star, right? Like Jimmy Butler or like Klay Thompson, like those guys where they know, like, hey, I'm not gonna be like the main guy. I don't really care
and
for
they don't really have the ambition like in Klay's
case. George, maybe. Yeah.
Like, it's like Kyrie clearly had the ambition to be the man on a team. And, you know, it seems like someone like Kawhi Leonard has that too. So you can at least understand. You can at least understand from the, you know, just kind of, you play with LeBron, it's always going to be LeBron's team.
It will be. And then, I mean, that's, you know, but, you know, someone like Scottie Pippen, who's a colleague of mine now, which is also a cool thing to be able to say that.
Oh, that's Scottie Pippen's
a colleague, right? It's a big time flex. But, you know, Scottie didn't get the dollars that Michael got, didn't get the credit that Michael got, but he also, those experiences they had together as winners have set himself up for life. Like, Scottie Pippen will continue to, whether it be, you know, some sort of consultant with the Bulls or with ESPN or whatever else in business. You know, he is universally respected as one of the greatest winners. And the main guy was Michael Jordan. But guess what? Being the other main guy was set yourself up for a pretty darn good life. Now, the money that these players make today is so astronomical, like really good players, that, okay, maybe you don't need to win to be set up for life. But, like, if it matters to you, like, guess right. what? LeBron, yeah, I know he doesn't have, you know, incredible amount of championships, but like, he gets you to a winning stage with, you know, if you ask someone like Kyle Korver, you know, what do those years in Cleveland mean after mm-hmm. being kind of an also ran, like, it means a lot. And, you know, I don't know. If Kawhi Leonard already has the finals MVP, Kevin Durant already has a Finals MVP. Klay Thompson already has three championships. Like, maybe those guys don't need that type of validation of playing with a guy like LeBron for this stage of their career. But I imagine there's going to be somebody out there. And the question mark is, will that player be good enough to pair with LeBron and fit the right way as LeBron, you know, has father time take over? Or, like, could, like, a team like Toronto or Milwaukee or some team that no one expected to really make that ascension the same way no one expected Golden State to make that ascension all of a sudden take over the league? And we're talking about all this, we're wasting all our breath, but it doesn't matter anyway because there's going to be some other super team that no matter who put their team together will be able to contend with it.
That's the other thing. Father time, though, is because I was just thinking, like, looking down the line, Anthony Davis, he might not get traded, whatever, would be a free agent. But then we're talking about LeBron at 35, 36. And now we're kind of hitting that stage where it's like, man, no matter, you know, no matter what you do, no matter what you put in your body, there's only so much you can do here before it kind of.
You can lock yourself in the gym as long as you want. You can't fight
it
forever.
That's what I mean. Right.
You're talking about fruits, vegetables, and water, right? Put in your body, because I'm not going to be privy to any other type of conversation we're having here.
Dave's like, I'm not getting aggregated for this.
Yes. Hell no.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's kind of for the purpose of this season, I do think that it's the Lakers and the Warriors, the top two teams. And it's especially in the postseason, especially when it's a 7-game series and you got to see LeBron. There's no team in the West that has, like, or the East, I would say,
the
too,
Thunder
that
the,
has that
the
ability.
The Thunder are the only other team in the West who stacks up as well. And I just have a very hard time seeing a best of seven with late game scenarios where one decision maker is LeBron and the other is Russell Westbrook, and that playing out well in the Thunder's advantage. So,
well, you guys aren't alone in that opinion. I mean, a lot of people I've talked to around the league, that's kind of the way it's stacking up. Like, now I think the interesting thing though is, you know, these conversations I was having a couple weeks ago. Literally in the last 2 weeks, the Houston Rockets have seemed to have got their stuff together. Again. Right. And, man, you guys put some dirt on their grave for the last couple of months. So I'm curious if there's anybody out there in Rockets Twitter has, like, been waiting for this moment to, like, you know, James Harden scored more points over a 10-game span since Kobe Bryant 2007. Take that, Andy Lou. You know, but
they got
they're
their
looking
win.
Pretty good.
They got their win last May with the Warriors essentially, I mean – the Rockets lost in the best way possible, which is they were up 3-2 and their best player, or whatever you want to consider, Chris Paul, went down. Like, they didn't lose that series.
So you're saying, like, the Cavs didn't lose in 2015 because they're up 2-1?
They're
missing Kevin and Kyrie.
That's how they feel. Yep. I'm just saying, that's how you feel in that moment. I mean, I kind of think Chris Paul's hamstrings are a ticking time bomb at all times, but whatever.
And he's washed. So that's the other thing. Like, even if he comes back, even if the Rockets make it again, like, I mean, come on, are we really like, Harden's great, but then we've seen Harden in the postseason. People love to roast, like, oh, Steph's not as good as he is in the regular season. Have we seen James Harden play? Like, have we seen him? Have we seen him go one on one against Kevon Looney? Like, I don't even know who Kevon Looney is.
My favorite stat of the last playoffs was he had over 40 in game one of every series. And then proceeded to shoot like under 40% for the remainder. It was just kind of like, I mean, when you run the same thing back and forth against a good team, they're going to inevitably just force your hand.
Fouls are called a little bit tighter, or I guess a little bit less loose. Tight. I guess, looser in the postseason.
That was perhaps the best part when Harden didn't get the couple calls in Game 7 where he was flopping into those threes. And then it was all like, oh, the Warriors did this with the rest, blah, blah, blah. And then they went on and missed 27 threes in a row, which I didn't even know that was mathematically possible. But, you know, I guess they just made one or two. It would have been a close game.
Guys, you hit them all year. PJ Tucker missed an open shots. And, it's Harden.
Ariza, who apparently was the team's MVP considering how they started this year. I think he was 0-11 or 0-12 in Game 7. So, yeah.
I wonder what Trevor Ariza is thinking now with the not only, I mean, he obviously got his bag for from Phoenix, but he gets traded to Washington, and now John Wall is going to go undergo season-ending surgery.
Can he get bought out again? I mean, sorry,
I think he can just get traded. Yeah, I think he can just get traded, so he could end up somewhere else.
Got to be a Laker. He's definitely a LeBron vet like guy. Like he's the quintessential like just stand in the corner, play some defense, do some goon shit, right? Like knock stuff out. That's the most LeBron role player type of guy. Like you can just see it. Like I don't even know how he's not a Laker right now.
LeBron do everything, and I'll just make all the dirty work plays.
Well, I do think he would help out the Lakers so much. A lot. Do you think there's anything that the Warriors need to do to short? I mean, obviously, DeMarcus Cousins theoretically would be that big piece. But do you think there's anything else?
Damn, Sam, we didn't even talk Warriors.
We're an hour in. The Draymond thing is the most interesting because at some point Clay's going to snap out of this. This is like the longest shooting slump I've ever seen from him. But nothing he's doing is like it's not like his shot has changed. Like he changes form or something like that. It's just a really weird cold spell. But Draymond's the interesting one because like I mean. Christmas Day was a perfect example. The Lakers' defense on him was pretty disrespectful. Like, just not even they treated him like he was Tony Allen. And if teams are going to do that the rest of the way, it'll be interesting to see because, you know, I guess he can just keep shooting, but how many does he need to hit to make that actually hurt the defense? You know, hitting 3 out of 9, I mean, that's still 9 possessions where Steph and KD didn't shoot the ball.
Right. And I mean, it was not only that, but like, they were, you know, sagging off Draymond and stuff like that, trying to limit the touches of Clay, KD, and Steph. And yeah, I mean, then even if the ball's out of the hands of Draymond, like Alphonso McKinney getting more shots, or like, I mean, I'm not saying that this is something Steve Kerr can't figure out because I think he's as good a coach there is in the league, but it's something they're going to have to work with because I think more teams, it's a copycat league. You saw Portland do it a couple of days later and sag off Draymond again.
Yeah, the league is catching up, if not, you know, kind of caught. I think the Warriors' biggest advantage isn't schematic, right? They had large schematic advantages the last couple of years, especially before KD got here. Now it's almost like they're winning on talent. Like they're gonna win this title this year, and it's gonna be on talent, unless Steve Kerr changes his offense, right? And he does what everyone wants him to do, which is essentially just run pick and roll every single possession, right? Which none of us think he's not gonna.
And that's what makes the regular season really annoying, because there's no incentive for him to wholesale change his scheme for a, you know, December 29th game against the Blazers tonight.
Well, that's why it's really interesting, actually, to me. Like, the Lakers did do that, right? And I'm so used to just covering these two regular season games, Cavs, Warriors, and they mattered so much to the point where, like, there was that rumor one year that the Cavs were just going to rest their guys because they're at the end of a road trip. And it's like, well, we don't want to show anything, right? Well, the Lakers got to play the Warriors 4 times. And so they break out this, you know, kind of radical defensive approach in their first game. Well, they got 3 more regular season games this year. And do they do it again? They hide it? Like, it's an interesting strategy.
And Steve waits till the last second. Sam gets annoyed at this every day, but he waits until the last possible second to make any type of adjustment. And then he'll wait another one after that. He won't do anything unless the team is literally down 3-2 in a series, right? So like I think they're gonna do anything. That's the most frustrating part until April, right? Like they're not gonna do anything markedly different. And so we're kind of stuck watching this offense, and it's kind of been that way for this is not for the past week, right? This is not something that the Lakers threw out and, oh my God, the Warriors, like...
Like, obviously, it got more like, attention because it was on Christmas Day, but it'd been a thing that had been going on.
It's been a while.
Yeah. Right. But it's so difficult, though, because, one, because of the way the schedule has changed, there's less back-to-backs. It also means there's less practice time, so teams don't practice a lot. He knows that if he overreacts to what's going on the court, like... they could easily tune him out and be like, we've won 3 championships, dude. Like, chill out. And so it's a tough spot for someone like Steve Kerr. I mean, like, some people around the league laughed at it last year. But like when he like handed over the when they played Phoenix, right? He handed over the medals to the team. Like that's kind of radical and it's kind of wild. But like it to me, it was like saying that I recognize that this kind of sucks for all of us. Like it's not necessarily fun. Like a dynasty is fun when you're out of it, and dynasty is fun when during you actually win and during the playoffs. But all the other times, it's kind of the worst because you are, you know, if you guys play pickup, like I don't know if you ever go and there's just one guy playing super hard defense,
right?
And kind of everyone else is just kind of like
that's Andy
playing like a fun game. That's no, that's what the Warriors face like on regular season games. They're like, yo, we just want to like get out and get a sweat, man, and like get a nice dinner after the game, you know. And it's like you got teams trying to make a mark on them,
yeah.
And that happens over and over and over again. Like it, you know, I think they're kind of over it.
Yeah, I think that in the summer they talked about getting younger, which is why they, among other reasons, you know, didn't really look to replace a David West, a JaVale, Zaza, and you know they wanted to give those minutes to like a Damian Jones, a Jacob Evans, neither of which worked out. But you know, just because they thought maybe that would kind of just give more energy, right? Because KD and Steph and those guys are kind of, they know they're only measured on the playoffs at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So the hope was putting young guys around them would kind of, you know, someone who's unproven, who this December game does mean something for, would reinvigorate them. And so far it hasn't happened.
Right. And I guess it's not necessarily youth movement, but I theoretically, DeMarcus could provide some sort of extra motivation or like a guy in there looking to prove something.
I mean, they're going to at least have to figure some stuff out because you can't just roll out DeMarcus and ask him to do what Zaza did, you know, like, hey, just set screens, you know, so you have to like at least figure out how you're going
to
get
him. They want him to be back too, right? Like they're not that happy that it's damn near January.
Zaza's job was to set screens or that was to injure players.
They go hand in hand.
I picked it up after an hour. I picked up.
Yeah, like, I was just gonna say that you're getting it now, huh? That's fire off some tweets, but yeah. I mean, yeah. So what do you think? We're gonna get you out of here. I guess last question. What do you think? What do you think about KD? Where he's going? Prediction, right? And what do you think about the Warriors? Are they winning? Are they getting this three-peat like Kobe and Shaq, like MJ? Is that what's gonna happen?
So it's such a connected question, right? Like, on some respect, you could say that if he gets the three-peat, it's like, okay, well, is the four-peat going to be better? And so it's easier to leave, right? But also, like, who walks away from a championship team when they're still in their prime? Right.
Michael Jordan.
And, well, good one.
Did he walk away?
Maybe the 30 for 30 will let us know what really happened.
Anyone listening to the podcast can tune into the 30 for 30 on ESPN Plus in the springtime. I do think they're going to win, but I also think KD's going to lose, which is kind of like, excuse me, KD's going to leave, which is kind of counterintuitive. You'd think if they win, he would stay, but it just seems like he's going to leave.
And
I think they're going
to
win.
The only counter I have to that, and I want to get your thoughts on this and then, you know, we're done and we've gone way longer. The weirdest thing KD does, because I'm of the thought that he's probably leaving too, like he just doesn't seem fulfilled. But he does everything with the new arena that's opening next year, like the only player. And he does all these events at Chase Center and markets like let me put it this way. Every other Warriors player is spending this year doing like a thank you to Oakland PR tour. KD's spent the whole year doing a, you know, excited to get to San Francisco tour.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he clearly seems like, you know, he just kind of whatever he's in the mood for that day is what he'll say and do. But it's really strange to do all that and talk about how, you know, you're excited about the new building and then be the one to and then walk away, you know, right before it opens.
But like, what is happening at the building? I know there was the day where he was wearing like
the
cat's socks and the boots and stuff like that. But like, is he meeting with the corporate sponsors there? Because that could benefit him even if he was playing for another team.
That's true too. Yeah, I mean, all his San Francisco tech stuff can transfer to whatever team he moves to.
Right. So, I mean, again, like I don't think he is ever going to find peace as a Warrior, unless maybe if he stayed like literally the rest of his career, like.
And they ship out a couple players and retool, and
they win, you know, 7 championships or something like that. And it's like you were 1A or 1, depending on who the fan is, on the greatest team of all time. I mean, he would obviously have peace at that point. But, you know, to have the patience to do that, and also, you know, listen, if Steve Kerr, who I find to be one of the more intelligent and likable people I deal with in the NBA, when he says we're the most scrutinized team of all time, if with his rational thought process is saying that, then what are the less rational people saying? Like they probably feel like it's even a bigger deal than what they go through on a daily basis playing for the Warriors in terms of the negative experience of the scrutiny. Well,
I feel like Steve made that comment to make Kevin feel better. That seemed like one of those media comments aimed at one player. Because I don't know how anyone
could Steve say, reading the tweets.
I don't know how anyone could say that the Warriors are, you know, more scrutinized than, let's just say, the 2010-11 Heat.
Steve had an accidental tweet, didn't he, a couple years
ago? He did, yeah. He's not a fan of Harden.
That's what it was.
Travel.
Steve Kerr's wife loves to mention Sam and let him know of the slander that Sam's gives is all trash. So that's always fun. You know,
oh, wow. Okay.
That is Twitter. That is Twitter. So Dave, we are going to let you out of here. You, and for the aggregators, KD is leaving. The Warriors are winning the title. Man,
I did say those two things. Yeah, that's right.
I appreciate you coming on, man.
All right, thanks, guys. Great to catch up to you.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.